world of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday, March the 20th, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, today we're going to look at justice and Trump. We're not going to get any justice from Trump. Will there be justice for Trump and for war crime Pete, his sidekick? We'll also have BB, who's been suspected to be dead. We've seen several clearly AI videos been put out as proof of life. Yesterday, he held a press conference. Or did he? We'll take a look at that as well. And then we have morale. Morale not only within MAGA, but morale on board the premier aircraft carrier of the U.S. Navy. When you look at the morale within MAGA, the effects of this war have not even been felt yet. And we have a Frenchman who goes full Holy Grail on Donald Trump. You stupid English types. And he farts in his general direction. And we'll give you all the points as to why they and NATO would never support Trump in the Gulf. And finally, we got Paul Ehrlich. The false prophet of death and depopulation has finally depopulated himself. We'll take a look at his legacy of lies. Well, the UK Telegraph, as a matter of fact, has an article about how unpopular this war is. And look at this picture here. This is Washington, D.C. These are posters that people put up. You see that picture of the servicemen members, some of them, there's at least one woman who has died. But you see the service members' name, their picture, and it says such and such name did not have to die fighting Iran for the Epstein class. And then that's alternated with a poster that says Operation Epic Fury. And the epic is scratched out to be Epstein Fury. This is in Washington, D.C. And so this is another reason, folks, for quagmire. Because of the wag the dog aspect. Actually, I think I would have called it the wag the documents, right? So there's a lot of different reasons that we're in this, right? We're in this to wag the dog. We're in this because Israel demands it. We're in it because Trump is a chaos agent. Yeah, we need to get smart. As I've said before, this guy is a one-man fourth tourney. Whether he intends to do that for some other powers that be, you know, that's what the World Economic Forum wants. They're pushing very hard for their fourth tourney. They want the current world to be burned down so they can build their new one back better. Not something that we want, but what they want. It's the same type of thing you see happening in Gaza. And so that's also a part of this. That's another motivation. A big real estate deal. And so there's an interesting op-ed piece on Spectator. The end of Trumpism. The guy says after Ron closed the Strait of Hormuz, all the boasting from Trump and War Pete looks pretty hollow. The reversal has not brought out the president's dignified side. He now boasts about the comprehensiveness of his glorious victory while imploring America's hitherto unconsulted allies to join him in a naval campaign to get the strait back open. The message seems to be, help, help, we're kicking ass. That's... And it is that silly, that absurd. So he said, the attack on Iran is so wildly inconsistent with the wishes of his own base. Well, it's not just the wishes. It's what he ran on. It's one of his central planks. No more regime change, no more foreign wars. It is so diametrically opposed to their reading of the national interest that it's likely to mark the end of Trumpism as a project. Trump may entertain himself with the presidency for the next 3 years, barring impeachment, but the mutual respect between him and his movement has been ruptured, and his revolution is essentially over. Well, at least some good could come out of this, maybe. I don't know. But he says, contrary to its portrayal in the newspapers, Trumpism was a movement of democratic restoration. I don't think I would characterize it that way. I mean, you know, there was all this talk about voting and everything, but you wanted to have honest elections. He's the guy who started the vote by mail for everybody. Prior to that, there was absentee ballots for people who were disabled or sick or had some other issue, but it wasn't universal vote by mail. I would say that it is not a movement about democracy. I would say it is a movement that is about demagoguery. And that's really what the Trump movement is about. As a matter of fact, Gerald Celente sent this to me. He said, you gave Trump too much credit. You said that he speaks like an eighth grader. He says you gave him six grades too high. He actually speaks like a second grader because this is what demagogues do. And this is an analysis that people did of his speeches compared to speeches of recent presidents, as well as current global leaders from other countries. They said, and of course, I've got a clip of this so you can take a look at it here. Let's see, here it is right here. That's what it looks like. They grade it. They looked at 34,000 words. And how many unique words did he have? What percentage is he repeating himself over and over again? And that's another sign of not having much of a vocabulary. They said, modern political leaders often sacrifice clarity for theatrics, using repetition, exaggeration, and emotional appeal to dominate headlines rather than inform citizens. That's demagoguery in my book. A new report that examines Trump's speech patterns and compares them to those of other political leaders. They examined thousands of words from Trump in recent interviews, along with other American and European political leaders. Key metrics including vocabulary, diversity, average sentence length, readability, hedge frequency, and recurring signature expressions. The study compares his communication patterns with those of other leaders to identify a data set. And so what they found was that he has the readability level of a second grader. His vocabulary is limited with a 10% diversity. He rarely hedges statements. And by that, what they mean is he's always certain of what he has to say. Never uses words like perhaps, definitely, in my opinion. Have you ever heard Trump say that? I can't recall ever hearing him say use those words. He's always certain about what he does. So he frames nearly everything in extremes. Bigger, never seen before, it's huge, 100%. Actually, he doesn't use 100% all the time. He uses 92%. It wasn't that long ago somebody pointed out, you know, he's lying and just talking off the top of his head about numbers. And he said, well, 92% of blah, blah, blah. He uses that over and over and over again. Structures, topics around himself. Only because of me, I inherited this, right? Signals shared understanding. Well, everybody understands this. And then he uses numbers symbolically, emphasizing scale over precision. I was talking about Trump's vocabulary as I got cut off here. Comparing to Obama, Obama was graded at 11th grade. Biden was graded as 4th grade. So we're going downhill. And George W. Bush was 7th grade. And Trump is 2nd grade. Compared to some other leaders that are contemporary, you've got people like the Irish prime minister, and he is at, let's see, what grade is he? I don't see his grade, but he is at a 15% vocabulary. Boris Johnson is at a 19% unique words of what he says. So they're looking at the repetition. I would like to see what they do with Thomas Jefferson. You know, it's one anecdote. JFK assembled a large number of scientists in the White House, and he said, we've got the most brain power we've had in the White House here at this dinner since Thomas Jefferson dined alone. So we'll see what happens with this. But as I point out, the language that he uses is designed to be memorable, headline-friendly, which helps to generate attention. I'd like to know if they could score Adolf Hitler. So we can have a demagogue baseline there and see where Trump compares to that. But that's really what's going on. It's demagoguery. It's not democracy. The Trump movement is what happens when Americans discovered the system could not be reformed democratically, only dismantled. And so this person who's writing this looks at it as a standpoint that we have a system of ideological enforcement, a credentialocracy, a civil service of bureaucrats, he thinks, is the real check on the president. I don't see that as a check on the president at all, quite frankly. First of all, the deep state is under the president. It's not something off to the side. It's something that Trump was over the entire first 4 years that he was there, and it's something he could do something about. But of course, the real failure is that Congress doesn't do anything. They have kicked everything over to the bureaucracy and to the executive branch. So don't talk to me about democracy. Democracy was not supposed to be an all-powerful executive that we all elect. Democracy was supposed to be the Congress that was supposed to represent the people. The House was supposed to represent the people. The Congress was supposed to represent the states because they were supposed to have power as well. The people as well as the states, as well as dividing power within different branches in the government. That was the design. It's been completely taken away. And that has been bipartisan. It's been an agreement by all of the branches of government, including the state governments as well. So I said, there's really only two safeguards against a rogue executive. First, the public must elect a public-spirited person of unimpeachable character. And second, that person must honor the Constitution. The Iran assault shows that neither condition is operative. And we don't have a king that we elect every 4 years. That's the other thing that this article seems to mistake here. He says, no one who witnessed Trump's bravery after being hit with a would-be assassin's bullet in Pennsylvania will doubt that he has character. Well, I didn't see him hit with a bullet. I saw a fake event. I don't believe that that happened at all. And in terms of him having character, he doesn't have character. He is a character. He's an actor. You know, the big difference between Trump and Ronald Reagan was people could kind of keep arm's length against Ronald Reagan because they keep reminding themselves, the guy is an actor. I'm not sure if this is real or not. But with Trump, they think it's real. And the guy is an actor. He's a professional wrestling actor who can cut his ear when necessary. Americans did not expect Trump's character flaws to endanger them in the realm of foreign policy. Iran's policy has been made over the past year by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Trump's real estate crony, Steve Witkoff, working in consultation with Netanyahu. Kushner and Witkoff carry the title Special Envoy for Peace. That is, neither of them have been confirmed by the Senate, as top diplomats and cabinet members must be. Kushner would not even release a financial disclosure statement. But we've seen the big deals that the guy is doing, real estate deals. And if you understand Kushner's involvement, as he points out, it would be an understatement to say that Kushner is close to the Israeli government. On visits to the Kushner family when Jared was growing up, Netanyahu literally stayed in his bedroom. Kushner is also close to the clown prince, Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, who overruled the Saudi regulations to invest $2 billion of Saudi sovereign wealth fund into Kushner's investment fund, Affinity 2. Affinity. And it was just weeks into Trump's war. The New York Times alleged that Kushner had continued to raise money for his firm in the Middle East while he was working as an envoy. We're not allowed to see his financial statements. He's got a special made-up title. Not been confirmed by anybody, not been questioned by anybody. As a matter of fact, this is another thing everybody was told when Trump was running, because a lot of MAGA rightfully did not trust Jared Kushner. And we were all told that he wasn't going to have any role in the second Trump administration. Witkoff's family joined Trump to found World Liberty Financial, a crypto company. As a matter of fact, he points out in this article, Witkoff's family. What Witkoff is doing and what Trump is doing is saying, well, that's not us. That's our sons that are doing this deal. And so it's the family business is doing it. But I don't have anything to do with the family business. So this is not a conflict of interest. Well, clearly there's a conflict of interest with Jared Kushner. Last year, the United Arab Emirates put $2 billion into World Liberty Financial. As a matter of fact, they're going around. It seems like that's the standard buy-in, isn't it? They go around to these Arab countries and get them to buy into whatever venture Kushner is doing or the Trumps are doing. $2 billion is the amount. It's kind of like when Rudy Giuliani was selling pardons for $1 million, right? Well, you want to get into their good graces with this stuff, you have to pony up $2 billion. So shortly afterwards, they received clearance to import hundreds of thousands of state-of-the-art NVIDIA chips, despite the UAE having close ties to China. Kushner and Witkoff are neither financiers nor diplomats by trade. They are real estate moguls. At the World Economic Forum in Davos in January, with Trump in attendance, the two of them unveiled an artist's rendition of a gigantic Dubai-like oceanfront development called New Gaza, complete with a timeline for its construction. Of course, ground could not be broken until the property had been purchased by whoever planned to develop it, unless Israel planned to neutralize the place by force of arms in the meantime. And this is the other aspect of it. I said, it's being overlooked that perhaps this war is a big real estate grab, like Gaza. People can see it with Gaza. But if you look at the bigger picture, if you look at what Huckabee said, all this land belongs to Israel. They just have to find a way to steal it. And so if you blow up all the oil production that is there, because that's what Israel has started doing. Ron said, if you blow up our oil facilities, will blow up the Gulf states that are allied with the United States. And that kicked off this week. If they blow up all the oil facilities, you might be able then to overthrow these so-called monarchies that are there and create unrest and take the land. By law, Senate and House leaders must be informed of impending military operations. Nobody informed them about Iran. They would have been curious to know that the U.S. had volunteered its military to take on the regional rival of Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE on the say-so of two irregular, quote-unquote, diplomats who have real estate interests in those countries. You cannot blame Netanyahu for taking advantage. Probably never again would his country get to deal with a president so gullible, so for sale. But as soon as the attacks began on Iran, the news brought talk of a tactical divergence between Israel and the U.S. Israel wanted Iran wrecked and weak and was hitting oil infrastructure that the U.S. had warned it not to. The U.S. wanted the oil industry up and running, first to lay claim to the oil for Trump, later to prevent the tit-for-tat strikes on Mideast oil that could cause a global depression. Well, that's happening now. You are here. The tit-for-tat strikes against oil production, and we are on our way to a global depression, and Israel's just fine with that because they're looking to take the land. They're looking to take those countries. The only divergence between Israel and the U.S. when it comes to war aims is that Israel has war aims and the U.S. has none, has no war aims. And I saw that earlier. I saw he's in the hospital. Chuck Norris has died at the age of 86. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, he was a nice guy. I got to know his son, who directed a movie that involved people at InfoWars. I'm sorry to hear that. Getting back to this, the only divergence between Israel and the U.S. when it comes to war is that Israel has war aims and the U.S. doesn't even know what it's talking about. For Europeans now marching against the war, Israel's invasion of Lebanon is evidence that the U.S. is abetting an escalation of Israel's unpopular Gaza war. For a growing part of Trump's own base, while Iran remains the bigger threat to America's global position, Israel is the bigger threat to America's democracy. And that's why they came after Joe Kent when he said, it's clear that we started this war to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. Trump's case for going to war is a lot like George W. Bush's case back in 2003. It is a collection of stirring phrases about weapons of mass destruction, about terrorists, about countdowns to this and countdowns to that, and about how many times some politician said, death to America in 1985. But then, as now, having many arguments doesn't add up to having a good argument. In other words, there's no good reason. You can throw out a bunch of, we don't like those Iranians. They're really bad. But having many arguments is not the same as having a single good argument. Like Bush, Trump's aides treat America's superior weaponry as the entire solution. But as this guy points out, maybe having this big military is not a solution, but it's the problem because it keeps drawing us into these wars that we continue to lose. That's the problem of the military-industrial complex, creating ever more complex weapon systems that are ever more expensive and drawing us into one conflict after the other. And I'm going to say, as we look at what is the weak point for the American side in all this? Well, it's the anti-ballistic missile system side. And can we stop this madness of Trump's Golden Dome thing? That is folly beyond belief. It is the epitome, the next level, if really, I guess they can keep going. But it's the next level of a kind of expensive, complicated, centralized military solution. When the world is wisely looking at asymmetric warfare, meaning cheap, decentralized, almost guerrilla warfare. They keep making these huge, complicated, expensive systems because that's how they make so much money. That's what's really driving all this stuff. So Trump really does seem to have gone to war, thinking his abduction of the president of Venezuela argued for a similar success in Iran. He is somehow a world historical catalyst. He may already be, incredible though it sounds, one of the half dozen most important Americans who ever lived. This is not to say that he's good. It's just to say that he is important. And I said for a long time, he is precedent Trump. He is changing this country in the same way that Abraham Lincoln or FDR did. He's changing the forms of government with bad precedents. He is talking about him being a historical catalyst. As I've said, he is a one-man fourth turning. He is the one man who can get the world into a global depression as well as a world war, and that's what he's working on right now. Trumpism is about democracy, or it's about nothing. No, it's about demagoguery. For Trump's base, the sense of betrayal is acute. John Mearsheimer recently remarked of Trump, he said he treats allies worse than he treats adversaries. He does the same in domestic politics as well. Trump is now carrying out the policy of the very think tanks and democracy spreaders that he rose to power by promising to fight. Yeah, he has become the other side. He's a bad actor. And I say that knowing that he's good at acting. I say that because he is evil. So there will be no post-presidential peace for Donald Trump, says the New Republic. I hope they're right. The president and his allies, like War Pete, will face impeachment, lawsuits, maybe even the Hague, the International Criminal Court, when you push war crimes, as War Pete and all the people around him have been doing. It's not enough to say I was just following orders. But certainly Trump is responsible for the people talking about his no quarter, no mercy comments the other day. And yet we've already seen that in practice. We've already seen them killing people. They don't even know who these people are or what they're doing. They just suspect that they're up to something because they've got a boat that looks like something that they've seen criminals use. And then these people are not shooting at them. They are killing them. And this is why we've already got Robert Duterte, as I pointed out, who is president of the Philippines, and Donald Trump loved it in his first term. He complimented this guy for doing extrajudicial killings in his war on drugs. What is Trump doing? The same thing. Now, what has happened to Robert Duterte? When he left his presidency, the people who followed him turned him over to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And he is standing trial for the murders that he did as extrajudicial killings. Even more so for someone like War Pete, who has violated all moral laws, as well as the Pentagon's rules, as well as international treaties, by murdering people who have been shipwrecked. So House Republicans gathered at the Kennedy Center in January for a policy summit. Trump said, you got to win the midterms, because if we don't win the midterms, it's going to be, I mean, they'll find a reason to impeach me, he said. I'll get impeached. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to take a quick break. And again, I'm really sorry to see Chuck Norris. Now, he's a really nice guy. His son was as well. Patriot Girl One, Trump needs a straitjacket along with Exeth. Yeah, he needs somebody needs to make a straitjacket, and they can print the Constitution all over it. He can bind him down with the Constitution in the form of a straitjacket. Apoptosis says, I have seen the joke going around that the difference between the Vietnam War and the one in Iran is that Trump knew how to get out of Vietnam. That's a good one. I like that. That's exactly true. Yeah, the difference between Israel and America is that Israel has war aims and the U.S. does not. We'll be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
Angelo, 1999, says, if anyone's thinking of or getting ammo, Borelli has free shipping at a not terrible price. I'll just pass that along then. We're going to be, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for people to share where they can get this or that kind of commodity or food or whatever, because we're going to see the price of everything going sky high. Like Wally Walrus, thank you very much for the tip. I appreciate that. Let's take a look. We had a proof of life press conference yesterday for Benjamin Netanyahu because, as I pointed out this week, you know, there were a couple of pictures that surfaced that showed him being drug out of rubble in a suit and tie. He had a gash on his face and his eyes were closed. And people pushed that over to AI and said, is this real or not? And there was pretty high certainty, almost 100% certainty, that those are real pictures. Unlike the pictures that we saw that were recycled, we saw recycled pictures of Trump and Huckabee passed off as something that was current. We had multiple videos, the coffee shop video and some other ones that were out there that were obviously had AI artifacts in it. Real telltale signs of that. And so there was a press conference yesterday. Actually, people started making fun of the BB AI stuff. You saw things
like this. Mr. Prime Minister, I wanted you to know the president asked me to come and make sure you were okay.
Yes, Mike.
Is that a zombie?
Yes, I'm alive.
It's not only is it satire, but it's important for people to understand just how easy it is to do a lot of this stuff, even for individuals and amateurs. Imagine the power that is there for a state entity to use AI as a deep fake to deceive. Things like this. Here's a coffee cup. He's flipping and not spilling the coffee cup. Yeah, well, then we had the press conference. And I was curious to see that. And as I was watching it live, I thought, well, he is taking questions that are there. And these are questions about things that just happened. And he's giving what sounds like contemporaneous commentary on it. You know, he's doing the kind of things like I'm saying, like, you know, hesitating or whatever, and just thinking off the top of his head. And it looked and sounded like BB. And then some people with some sharp eyes noticed some things like this. Look at the left hand as he's speaking. He puts his left hand on the podium.
That is wage war.
Very slight, America and Israel, very subtle.
And the people of
America. But watch when he puts his hand there. You can see the cuff grow out of the sleeve.
One.
There it goes.
Removing the nuclear pop threat.
There it is in slow motion. That's the kind of stuff that AI does. That's the kind of stuff that doesn't happen in real life. And that's kind of where we are right now. We really have passed the six-finger stage. I wasn't so sure when I saw that clip that that was really a sixth finger. We had another one where it looked like maybe there were four fingers. But when you see something like that, when you see a ring that as he's reaching his hand out, the ring, and you can clearly see his hand, the ring disappears and the ring comes back on, you know, a couple of frames later. That is an AI thing. That is an AI artifact. So we had seen that before in previous videos. And then when you hear it is again, just focused in. There's his hand and there it grows out. Right. So that is an AI artifact. So you say, well, how could they do a live presentation on that? If you work with this stuff, you realize how incredibly fast the voice stuff can be. And of course, you can have somebody that is wired up just like you've seen. What's the guy that did Gollum, the actor who did Gollum?
Andy Serkis.
You've seen Andy Serkis, dude. They wire them up. And it captures their moment, their movements, and it maps it on to a different visual. That's very easy to do. And the voice in real time is actually very easy to do. You know, you can clone somebody's voice if you've only got about 3 or 4 seconds of it. You can clone it very accurately. And if you got more time, you can actually get the nuance and the inflections that are in there as well. And it can do that transcription in real time, especially if you've got the resources of a government doing that. And so the reality is, though, that whatever, you know, whoever is running the government, again, this goes back to like the Biden rubber mask type of stuff, whoever is the dead hand of government and setting these policies, if you listen to what was said at the BB press conference, it's very concerning.
It is often said that you can't win, you can't do revolutions from the air. That is true. You can't do it only from the air. You can do a lot of things from the air, and we're doing, but there has to be a ground component as well. There are many possibilities for this ground component, and I take the liberty of not sharing with you all those possibilities.
But what he's saying is we're going to put boots on the ground. And when you look at this attack on the Iranian natural gas facility, and of course it was half owned by Qatar, and then Qatar gets their gas facility that they own 100%, they get that hit in retaliation by the Iranians. So the Israelis hit the one that they own half of, and then the Iranians hit the one that they own 100% of. the South Pars. This is what it looks like when it's burning. It is the largest of it. Well, the South Pars is not the largest. The one that's 100% owned by Qatar that got hit is the largest. And that was hit subsequent to that. Well, we also have Bibi talking about, so what is really needed? You know, we see, we can't really rely on the Strait of Hormuz or these other facilities that are out there. So what is the solution from Bibi? Well, you need to have a pipeline built. And that pipeline needs to go to Israel.
I think that what has to be done is to have alternative routes. Instead of going through the choke points of the Hormuz Straits and the Bab el-Mandeb Straits, in order to have the flow of oil, just have oil pipelines going west through the Arabian Peninsula, right up to Israel, right up to our Mediterranean ports, and you've just done away with the choke points for forever.
Yeah, there we go. So what is this about? Is this about nuclear weapons that he sold for 30 years, or is this about how we can get control of the oil and the pipelines? Is it about real estate? You know, it is kind of interesting because when you look at the man, there was another quote that came out because it looked very similar. The setting that they had looked almost exactly like a setting that they had back in 2023. And he made this statement in 2023, which really shows that the man has no moral constraints whatsoever.
Safeguards the future. You know, if people want to be naive, that they don't see the kind of world we're living in. In this world, it's not enough to be moral.
Yeah, it's not, you don't want that.
Just.
That's
it's
naive.
It's not enough to be right. You know? One of the greatest writers of the 20th century, someone that I admire a lot, was the historian Will Durant. Now, he wrote many volumes. I read most of them. He also wrote The Lessons of History, very brief, 100-page book, in which he said, well, history proves that, unfortunately and unhappily, Jesus Christ has no advantage over Genghis Khan. Because if you are strong enough, ruthless enough, powerful enough, evil will overcome good. Aggression will overcome moderation. So you have no choice. If you look at the world as it is today, you have to be blind not to see that the democracies led by the United States have to reassert their will to defend themselves.
You have to be blind not to see who this guy is. He says, yeah, it's not enough to be moral, just, right. It's better to be immoral, unjust, and wrong. He says, yeah, you need to be strong, ruthless, and powerful. That is the ethic of this guy, of the government that he leads in Israel, and everybody can see it in Gaza and everywhere else. This is the reality, folks. And you have to be, if you're a Christian, you have to be blind not to see that he is anti-Christ. And he is pro Genghis Khan. And yet we have everybody from Newsmax to a lot of pastors and an organization, Friends of Zion, that Netanyahu, who admires Genghis Khan and his strength, ruthlessness, and power, he admires him, but he does not admire Jesus Christ. He thinks Jesus Christ is weak, a loser. Right, and even worse, if you look at what the rabbis have said about Jesus. And so he despises Jesus, he elevates Genghis Khan, and he brings in thousands of pastors in the last year or so to this Potemkin village of religion that they have created, just like the Zionist pyramid, telling everybody, Judaism is the foundation of what you do. You know, Judaism is the foundation of Christ and of Christianity and of the USA. And we hear Huckabee saying that all the time. Well, Friends of Zion is very closely linked to Mike Huckabee, but it was something that Netanyahu worked with the guy who runs it. And I've talked about him at length in the past. I forget the guy's name right now. But They're bringing in all these pastors, wining and dining them, giving them a free trip and vacation. And go back and tell your flock about how Israel and Zion is what everybody needs to be focused on. Don't worry about Christ. You know, I'm going to portray Jesus as a loser. Well, you know, Genghis Khan conquered a few things, but Jesus Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. You're not going to take that away from him. And perhaps Netanyahu knows that by now.
The thing that really gets me is they'll reject everything from the Bible. Every last thing will be rejected from it, the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone like Netanyahu, I don't believe they even care about the Old Testament. I don't think they even care about the Torah. But they will come in and, you know, bring these pastors in and manipulate them, lie to them, use the scripture to twist them into supporting this regime. And it is so incredibly despicable. And these Netanyahu Christians talk about refuse his enemies, to see it.
Yeah, he talked about his enemies being Amalekites. He says, you know, yeah, you need to commit genocide. And that is a call to genocide when you call them Amalekites. And, yeah, it's like Ben Shapiro. He was asked, was it Joe Rogan who asked him? You know, did he believe that Moses parted the Red Sea? No, I don't believe that. I don't believe any of that. But I believe that God gave me the land. That's the one that I want, you know. I'll pick and choose one from column A.
Well, the thing is, if Ben Shapiro actually believed in miracles, he might be forced to believe that God might perform a miracle to give them back the land if he truly wanted them to have it.
That's what the ultra-Orthodox Jews believe. They think, if God promised us the land, God can give us the land, and he will be the one who will do it. We don't have to be ruthless and despicable like Genghis Khan and Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, while we're talking about Armageddon, you have this phrase is repeated over and over again by people who are in the energy industry.
I'm waiting for Legmageddon. That's going to be the real big one.
Yeah, I better run if it's Legmageddon. Anyway, an Armageddon scenario. And this is a article that is looking at, they talked to a lot of people who've been in the energy industry. And they said, what is happening now with these facilities being blown up is the Armageddon scenario that I was always concerned about. See, this is much worse than a temporary blockage at the Strait of Hormuz. You know, even if you clear out the Strait of Hormuz, now you've got production being shut down. What are they going to ship? An emergency workers sifting through the smoldering wreckage of Qatar's Ras Laffan. That's the one I couldn't remember. That's the largest complex. On Thursday morning, traders in Europe and Asia were waking up to a fresh energy crisis. In normal times, a fifth of the world's supply of liquefied natural gas flows through Ras Laffan, a vast industrial site almost three times the size of Paris. Built over three decades at a cost of hundreds of billions of dollars, all going up in flames now. This is the source of fertilizer for food, as I pointed out the other day, of helium that is needed for the manufacture of state-of-the-art silicon chips, and it's all going up in flames. It's not just the gas, but Europe and Asia depend a great deal on that gas. LNG terminals are some of the biggest, most complex constructions in human history. And Ras Laffan is the largest of them all, turning Qatar's huge gas reserves into a super-chilled fuel that can be shipped around the world, at least before the Iranian missiles arrived, that is. I woke up this morning and I thought, no, please, no, said Anne-Sophie Corbeau, a former head of gas analysis at BP, who is now at Columbia University's Center on Global Energy Policy. She said, this has always been my nightmare scenario, my Armageddon scenario, the one that I didn't want to see happen. Two gas traders said they were struggling to process the news after Iran launched a double-tap strike, firing ballistic missiles into the facility first on Wednesday night, then again the early hours of the morning on Thursday. One of the traders said, this is unprecedented. Gas prices in Europe rose 30% as markets reopened and have more than doubled since the start of the year, as traders are trying to calculate the impact of months or longer without Qatar's gas flowing to the world markets. Oil prices also jumped 10% to almost $119 a barrel. So before the attack, traders assumed that the flow of LNG from Ras Laffan would resume once the Middle East conflict eased and the Strait of Hormuz was safe for tankers to pass through. Gas prices having risen last week have stabilized far below the levels seen during Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine. But now that assumption has been shattered. One trader said that gas prices in Europe would be pushed higher through 2027, and that Europe would find it harder to refill its gas storage tanks this summer as Asian buyers strapped for LNG from the U.S. to make up for the lost supply. And was already Asia was already facing shortages and rationing due to the loss of supply from the Gulf. Europe, which has become more reliant on LNG since Russia slashed pipeline exports. Let me say, Russia did not slash the pipeline exports. America blew up the Nord Stream pipelines, 1 and 2. You know, they were increasing and spent billions of dollars to build these pipelines that were then blown up. That's what's really going on with all that. By the way, this is it was a Financial Times out of the UK that said Russia slashed pipeline exports, because in the UK, Russia has to be the enemy behind everything. It was actually the Biden administration that decided they wanted to blow up Nord Stream 1 and 2.
Dad, come on. Ivan Drago went out there and he punched the Nord Stream pipeline so hard it exploded. That's the truth.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure I could find video of it.
Just spontaneously combusted, even after you had the German chancellor at the time was keeping Nord Stream 2 from coming online at the orders of the Americans. Well, they didn't. He was getting a lot of pushback from AFD, and that was a major campaign push for the rising party AFD that is against the globalist agenda. And so to shut them down, they had to blow up the pipeline. So he wasn't taking the heat for keeping it closed.
Part of this also shows that this is a long-term plan. Anybody with any common sense would have looked at the Middle East and said, these people, they're chaotic, they're violent, and they hate each other. This area is always going to be in turmoil. It's never going to be a reliable source for anything, especially not something we rely on. We cannot trust the Middle East to not just devolve into chaos at any given time. It should not be a place we go to for a major resource.
That was the purpose of the part of the basis of the American Empire, was that we were going to go in and stabilize things and keep it peaceful and stable. You know, we were going to go in and pick the corrupt rulers that are going to, you know, whether it's the prince of Saudi Arabia or whether it's the Shah of Iran, we're going to put these guys in. We don't care how ruthless they are. But we're going to keep this oil flowing no matter what. And that is now not what is happening. And so both the petrodollar as well as the oil industry and the world's energy supply is now in chaos and ruins. The specialized equipment to super chill gas into LNG is incredibly complicated and will have to be painstakingly replaced, a job that will start only when Qatar is confident that workers can access the site safely without the fear of further attacks. So it's going to be a long time before they get started. It's going to take a lot of time and money to get this thing repaired. And it's not just about the strait being closed. We've got a couple of comments here. North American House Hippo said, I stopped believing video at least a decade ago when they started superimposing ads and graphics on sports fields as if they were really there and doing it in real time. That is pretty amazing. And now we are absolutely in running man territory. Yeah, when you look at this video, and yet when they use AI, you still have these artifacts that are there, like the sleeve that grows or the pocket that moves over to the hand or the ring that appears and disappears from one frame to the other. Those are clear indications that are there, but the pronouncements that come from the avatar, BB, those pronouncements are the policy of the Israeli government. And as somebody had said before, even if they killed him, they'd replace him with somebody as bad or worse. And so now we have the Genghis Khan avatar that is there that is telling us that we need to have Marines go die for oil and die for Israel's Genghis Khan ambitions. And that is really where we are. As one person said, though, what has happened here with the supply chain, they said a supply chain disruption can be fixed relatively quickly. and the key word there is relatively quickly. We're still having some knock-on effects from the disruptions that Trump created with the COVID lockdown, the supply chain disruptions. Of course, most of those are the fact that people have gone out of business. But you can, once the supply chain gets fixed, it takes a while to fix that. But if you attack the production, it's going to take a very long time to get it back online. And of course, you have Australia looking at running out of oil and gas within just a couple of weeks. And many other countries are looking at the same type of thing. We produce a lot of this ourselves and in the United States, and yet they went to war without even filling up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It's kind of interesting to hear War Pete say, well, we got to fill up what we've used here. You know, we need more. We need $200 billion more. We need 20% more than our new record military budget of $1 trillion. Now we need to add another 20%. And maybe more, he said. That's just to replenish what we've used and for more of this stuff. This is why we have these kind of wars, because we have a military-industrial complex that makes so much money off of this. And, of course, it looks like the Republicans are just going to rubber stamp this and go along with it. And no questions asked, whatever they wish to do. And that is the true war tax. That's the way Eric Peters does his daily when he does a take on it. It's like war tax and then the date, because that's what this really is. It's going to be a massive war tax. And the other part of the tax is going to be the shock sent through the system. I've said it before, I keep saying it. It's going to be much, much bigger than what happened with OPEC. And oh, by the way, as a helpful hint, just go back and look at what happened to gold during the OPEC oil embargo. We're going to take a very quick break and we'll be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Well, it's
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
Well, as we look at whether or not BB survived, we did have Mark Wayne Mullen survived in his hearing. Rand Paul, of course, did not vote for him, but all the Republicans did. Why? Do we want to have a guy who is a thug like this, a brawler? Do we want to have somebody like that in charge of this organization that's already got a reputation? And we've seen them brawling with people. We've seen them killing people. And we want to have somebody with anger issues like Mark Wayne Mullen is head of it? Well, Republicans say yes. So he got his confirmation. Even though Rand Paul voted against him, you had Fetterman from Pennsylvania voted for him. Truly amazing. And so they have switched places here. And all the Republicans and Democrats otherwise lining up on these different sides. And as we look at what is happening right now with TSA, one of the reasons we got that issue is because the Democrats are so upset about the thuggish, bullying, angry way that ICE and Border Patrol has been trained by the Trump administration. So we're not going to fund that. So they're refusing to fund Homeland Security. And that's why you're seeing this backlog everywhere with TSA. By the way, there's several airports that don't have a problem because they don't use TSA. They still have security that is there that harasses people, security theater, but they have privately run security theater. They don't actually use the employees from the federal government because the federal government doesn't pay their employees regularly. So he is now moving on to the full Senate, but Democrats have demanded reforms before they're going to fund ICE and Border Patrol, do the shutdown thing. So we'll see what they do voting for this guy. And he might still make it through, even with Rand Paul voting against him. But it'll be interesting to see what other Republicans will do with this. He clearly is the type of person that Donald Trump wants to run that agency, because that's the type of agency it's become. But it's not what any of us should want, quite frankly. You got John Thune or Toon. I don't know what the guy's, how he pronounces his name. He's the guy, he's the Republican who's head of the Senate right now, Senate leader. Maybe he needs to change his tune. And he says, I think this would be a great guy. So he's telling all the Republicans to vote for him. Paul said, this is a guy who brawls, a guy who can't even say he's sorry about wishing violence on me, and really applauding the attack that happened on me. Can't come and say, I don't know how he could, from my point of view, be the leader of ICE or Border Patrol. Well, that's exactly what Trump wants. And so we have former counterterrorism head being investigated by the FBI over alleged leaks. And, you know, as we look at this, isn't it interesting, as somebody pointed out, that funny how turning on Israel prompts an FBI investigation, but being mentioned thousands of times in the Epstein files does not trigger an FBI investigation. How do we investigate the FBI? This corrupt organization, and folks, it didn't just go bad. It was bad from the beginning. It was bad. It was created by a bad bureaucrat, J. Edgar Hoover, who had blackmail files on everybody. I mean, of course, just like Jeffrey Epstein, this has been a standard tactic for the longest time. And you had people from Republicans as well as Democrats. You had Harry Truman say J. Edgar Hoover is running this thing like a Gestapo. And Richard Nixon said he's blackmailing everybody. And so that's what the FBI is really about. And so the FBI is going to be investigating Joe Kent over alleged leaks. Now, who is alleging these leaks? This is a guy who used to be in the Trump White House in the first administration, Trump 1.0. He's former deputy White House chief of staff, Taylor Buttigieg. And he's the one who's making these allegations that Joe Kent was leaking in the first Trump administration. Well, I got to say, if that is true, why wasn't anything done about that before? If that was true, why didn't Taylor say something about that to Trump when Trump put a guy who was a leaker in as the deputy DNI? None of this stuff rings true, quite frankly. So Kent said he couldn't support the war in Iran in good conscience. The country says posed no imminent threat to the U.S., a claim that the White House dismissed. As a matter of fact, it's not just the White House that's dismissing it, but you had the people who saw what was agreed to in these negotiations that the U.S. and Israel were not negotiating in good faith. It was treacherous. It was, the legal term is perfidy. What they were doing, but the people who were part of it said this.
David. And there was one development yesterday that builds on reporting MS Now had earlier. Iran offered to give away all of its enriched uranium during the peace talks. And hours later, the U.S. started dropping bombs. And The Guardian broke yesterday that there were British officials, the British National Security Advisor was present in Geneva during that last round of talks. The British were surprised by the Iranian offer. They thought it was credible. They thought the talks should continue. And the British were shocked when the Trump administration started bombing Iran hours later.
And we know why that happened. Here's the Qatar
War needs to stop immediately. The aggression needs to stop immediately. Because everyone knows who is the big beneficiary of this war and dragging the whole region into this conflict. And unfortunately, what's taking place now, it's a serve for those agendas. Thank you very much.
Yeah, as a billionaire that was out of UAE, I think it was. And he had, in the past, had supported Trump, at least verbally, maybe financially. He said, what gives you the right to drag this entire region into war?
I just got to say, the placement of the camera and where that guy was standing made it look like he had a giant dunce cap on his head.
I know.
I couldn't make heads or tails of that for a second. Just like, That's a very odd hat he's wearing.
Yeah, he got rid of the towel or whatever that they normally wear. He's got a dunce cap. I don't know what that thing's called, but anyway. CEO of an AI company says that Gen Z needs to get ready for 30% unemployment. Think about that. You know, the worst unemployment rate that we had during the Great Depression peaked in 1932 at 23.6. This guy is saying that it's going to be 30% unemployment. But keep in mind that this is the CEO of an AI company. And this is a self-serving prophecy, if ever there was one. Again, right now, though, we do already have a situation of people coming out of university today are seeing 9% unemployment. And that is also depression-level stuff, right? 1930s, the unemployment rate rose to 8.7. And we are already at 9%. So the CEO isn't exactly a neutral party as he's stoking fears about AI. He has a company called ServiceNow, which does software as a service model. And it's not been doing too well on the stock market in recent months. So it's in his advantage to talk about how they're going to rule the world. Like a lot of other tech CEOs, he doesn't pause to wonder if it's worth slowing down. And considering what all this could mean for the mass of workers and families who will struggle under such a scenario. No, they've thought about it. And they're very enthusiastic about it because they get all the money. You and I will own nothing. They will own everything. This is why Elon Musk's first political move was to give $1 million to the guy who was pushing universal basic income back in the 2020 election, I think it was. And he was, that was the only thing that he was pushing at that point. He had one issue, universal basic income. That's how they deal with it. And that's what Bloomberg said when he was running for president. He said, the smart ones of us are figuring out how to take everybody's jobs. We've just got to figure out how to keep them from coming after us with guillotines. Well, good luck with that. You've got others like Yuval Harari think they can pacify everybody with sex, drugs, and video games. And he may be right. He may be right about that. If there's any good news, it is that CEOs don't get the final word. It really is up to us what we're going to do. Well, Iran is testing U.S. military might with a guerrilla assault on the global economy. To the extent that you see, this is The Economist out of the U.K. They call it Operation Blind Fury. And there's Donald Trump with his American army helmet on backwards, covering his eyes. But I like this take on it better. This is Operation Blind Fury, and there he is, blindfolded with an Israeli flag. That may be the true aspect of what's happening here. It's an asymmetric contest pitting the unrivaled conventional military might of the U.S. against an Iranian government waging an asymmetric war, a guerrilla fight that is now economic. But it's not just economic. As you've got Warpeet out there bragging about how they have shut down all the missile launching sites, the actual numbers of missiles launched are actually going up. And he's also bragging about how they have complete air superiority. And then we had an F-35 got hit and had to land. And the pilot, they say, is in stable condition, which means, I guess, that he got injured as well in the hit. So no details about that. They're very closed in terms of what they tell people. And that is a $100 million jet. And I think it's also interesting that they keep shooting down, even though Warpeet says they've got complete air superiority, they keep shooting down the MQ-9 Reaper drones, which cost $30 million apiece. They've shot down over a dozen of those now. So there's $360 million. Yeah, we're going to need to have $200 billion. Well, some of the people pushing back against that says that's way more than we spent annually during the Iraq War. I want to take a quick break. And before we take the break, let's talk a little bit about Paul Ehrlich. This is Mr. Depopulation. And he set us on a path back in the early 1970s down birth control, one-child policy, this radical environmentalism. He was the guy who started all of that. And, of course, he couldn't have done it without Johnny Carson. That's the sad thing about this. Paul Ehrlich was wrong, but he still changed the world. As I point out here, he was a rock star eco-pessimist. And his star status came from Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson had him on 20 times on his show. One of those times he had him on for an entire hour, which I think Carson's show is only an hour and a half, if I remember correctly. But he had him on for an entire hour. The only other pseudoscientist that he promoted like that was Carl Sagan. Billions and billions of times he was on his program. Carl Sagan said he was on just under 30 times. So he had Carl Sagan on more than he had Paul Ehrlich. But Paul Ehrlich attributed his success to his Carson appearances. He had a very small organization. Nobody was really paying much attention to his book. And then Johnny Carson had him on, and boom, it was big. So he is a rock star eco-pessimist, Malthusian. That in itself is remarkable that he lived to 93, because in 1968, he forecast that in the coming decade, at least 100 to 200 million people per year will be starving to death. By 1985, enough millions will have died to reduce the Earth's population to an acceptable level, like 1.5 billion people. Furthermore, he warned that by 1980, life expectancy of the average American would have fallen to 42 years as a result of cancer caused by pesticides. Yet, even though he predicted that there was going to be a massive famine and the population would decline to 1.5 billion, as he died, the world's population now is at 8 billion. Even though he said life expectancy was going to drop to 42 years, he lived to 93. His life was debunked by his own statistics. He survived half a century longer than the average life expectancy that he had predicted. And again, this guy is a false prophet of the religion of environmentalism. And unfortunately, that religion does not stone its false prophets. they just ruin everybody else's life with all this stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how wrong your predictions are. You kind of just get to graciously retire. They sunset you, and they bring in a new doomsayer that can be wrong.
That's right. Well, 60 Minutes was always one of the places pushing him. They took him seriously. Again, Johnny Carson took him seriously and promoted him to people. He had 60 Minutes doing puff pieces on him. Here's one of them.
We had formed an organization called Zero Population Growth, and then Johnny took me on The Tonight Show.
Would you welcome Dr. Paul Ehrlich?
You have to get the death rate and birth rate in balance, and there's only two ways to do it. One is to bring the birth rate down. The other is to push the death rate up.
I did the show maybe 20 times, and we went from 6 chapters and 600 members to 600 chapters and 60,000 members.
We are starting in now. This is the first step.
The Bagleys belong to a growing number of young marrieds who favor ZPG, zero population growth.
How many children do you have?
Two. Children.
Ehrlich's views on how to bring the birth rate down were concrete. Compulsion if voluntary methods fail, creating a blacklist of people, companies, and organizations impeding population control in the U.S., responsibility prizes for childless marriages, a tax on children, and a luxury tax on diapers and cribs.
The concerns about population became misanthropic. And it was taken with so much seriousness that Paul Ehrlich could recommend things like putting stuff in public water that would make people not as fertile.
Panic is not too strong a word to use for some of the advocates that I referred to as true believers.
It was a zeitgeist that was taking shape.
Attention, all citizens. Childbearing is herewith forbidden.
One of the things about zeitgeists is they have astonishing durability.
It appears that large families are on the way out, and ZPG may be possible.
The idea also took hold in the developing world, where governments like India's had already begun to embrace population control.
The core message of the book, population growth outstripping food supply, resonated quite a bit with India's elites, with the middle classes. They much preferred to believe that the poor were poor because of too many children, rather than being poor because of an unfair and unequal economic system.
If you start with that problem definition, then it's almost inevitable that there will be circumstances where governments and other actors will act in a way that is coercive.
In the mid-1970s, the Indian government began a controversial effort to encourage mass sterilization.
We do want to create an atmosphere in which people realize the importance of this program.
It led to abuses. Access to food aid and housing were sometimes used as coercion. Others weren't even given a choice.
More than 8 million sterilizations were performed, many forcibly. The people, in the words of one family planning expert, were treated like cattle.
Several days ago, crowds formed to protest being sterilized. The police opened fire and killed at least 50 of them.
Zero population growth is a tragic frame in the sense that it was assumed that there was no way out, that people would just go on reproducing until there really was a desperate circumstance in the world.
Ehrlich's message could be summed up in a dramatic prediction.
Sometime in the next 15 years, the end will come. And by the end, I mean an utter breakdown of the capacity of the planet to support humanity.
That would have been 1985. None of that stuff happened. I got to say that, you know, I grew up, I was in high school at the time of that. And my best friend in high school, one of my really good friends throughout college, was totally immersed in all this Paul Ehrlich stuff and zero population growth. When he got married, they only had two kids, and they were very concerned that they would only have two kids. He started going on and on about his rants about how much he hated too many people here and too many people there and all the rest of the stuff. And I changed the subject to music because I couldn't talk to him about any of this stuff. His mind was completely set on all of this. As a matter of fact, in one 2023 letter to the Wall Street Journal, a man named Kenneth MD of Woodbury, Minnesota, said that he took Ehrlich's warnings to heart and thus had no grandchildren, while the Earth's population reached 8 billion without dire consequences. He went on to call himself stupid and gullible for relying on Ehrlich's claims. And yet, this is something that was sold to us by mainstream media, by entertainment, as I said, with Johnny Carson being on there. You know, Johnny Carson comes on, Hollywood is selling you, you want to be rich, you want to be comfortable, you got sexy stars that are there, but you don't want to have kids, right? So what comes from that? Well, you have the government putting stuff into our food, which is the way that we're seeing it here in America. Government putting things into the water as well as the air to try to sterilize us, the injections and all the rest of the stuff. This is where the hatred of humanity comes from, I'm convinced. But it's even more direct than that in a lot of these cases. You look at Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is pushing this same stuff. And now they've got the so-called compassionate transitioning of kids, which is really sterilization, folks. That's what they're doing to these kids. Chemical, sometimes surgical sterilization. And it's not forced. It's gaslit. And so just recently, I guess about 5 or 6 years ago, you had 60 Minutes do this piece on Ehrlich.
Finding solutions to the problems was the goal 2 weeks ago at the UN Biodiversity Conference, where nations agreed to conservation targets. But at the same meeting in 2010, those nations agreed to limit the destruction of the Earth by 2020, and not one of those goals was met. This despite thousands of studies, including the continuing research of Stanford biologist Paul Ehrlich.
You know that there is no political will to do any of the things that you're recommending.
I know there's no political will to do any of the things that I'm concerned with, which is exactly why I and the vast majority of my colleagues think we've had it, that the next few decades will be the end of the
civilization. It's always just a couple of decades away.
We're
right?
Used to.
In the 50 years since Ehrlich's population bomb, humanity's feasting on resources has tripled. We're already consuming 175% of what the Earth can regenerate. And
it's not a problem.
Half of humanity, about 4 billion, live on less than $10 a day. They aspire to cars, air conditioning, and a rich diet. But they won't be fed by the fishermen of Washington's Salish Sea, including Armando Briones.
The tribe has been fishing salmon here for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
and your generation is seeing the end of that.
It's getting harder and harder. I hate to say, I don't want to say it's the end of it.
Why do you feel so emotionally attached to this?
It's everything we know. I'm fortunate enough to know where I know a lot of different things. I've done a lot of different things in my life. I've gotten good at evolving and changing.
Well, bottom line is they're tugging at your heartstrings, you know, this particular guy and the struggles that he's going through. Not, not saying he's going through struggles. What is the cause of it, though? Is it that we have too many people? Is it something that is that we can identify? Yeah, he's struggling with it. Did they have the right solution? New York Times reported Paul Ehrlich's death, saying that he faced criticism when his predictions proved premature. See, they're never going to give up on this. They're never going to give up on the lies about climate change. They're always going to keep that. And they're always going to say that doomsday is just 10 or 15 years down the road. It's not. And the issue is not that we don't have enough people. The issue that we got too many people. The issue is that they are being kept down by cruel governments, and they're being kept poor and ignorant and starved by these governments. That's the real issue. But what they do is they create a culture of death. That was the kind of stuff that was sold by Johnny Carson. That's the kind of stuff that Paul Ehrlich was talking about. As a matter of fact, I've got a lot of clips I'm not going to play, but in it, he talked over and over again about how can we reduce the population and do it quickly? We've got to do it right away. And he talks about how, well, we could have a massive pandemic. We could have a bioweapon that gets released. You must have loved Trump's term in 2020, which is about the time they did that 60 Minutes piece. He also, though, he said the best way to reduce the population is with wars. He must have died a happy man. Getting his mass bioweapon with the injection from Trump, seeing Trump's wars, all of these things that he'd predicted that didn't happen. And Trump is trying to make all this stuff come true. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Welcome back. I want to thank people that we've received checks from. As I pointed out, we've updated the gas gauge that's there. It's about 50% right now. And these are the people who sent in checks. I want to read out their names, first name and last initial. James F., Greg R., Aaron F., Margaret Mary T., Scott C., Eric K., Martin K., Susie and Gary M., Rob 45 in New Jersey, Elizabeth H., HD from NC, Joel B., Aaron W., Stacy P., and Stephanie. Also, Charlie, thank you very much. I appreciate that twice. And Jack L., CDM. These are the people who keep the show running, and I really do appreciate their contributions. Thank you so much. And I read the Zell contributions yesterday, I think it was, or the day before. We really do appreciate your support. And Wally Waller says, I was seeing gas over $5 a gallon yesterday in Oregon. Yeah, that is, a lot of states have passed the $5 mark on average. And this is, I forget what the average is nationwide, but it's gone up quite a bit. You do see a geographical difference. A lot of it is because of additional difference in state taxes on the gas that is there. Florida Farman says, all of our colleges are run by these creeps. That's right, pretty much. That is the consensus, but that doesn't make it true, does it? And AP Rumble Seat said, the Talmud has taken dominance over the Torah, which appears to be their equivalent of the Christian Scofield Bible to deceive and to socially engineer. I think that's an excellent analogy, especially because it's the Talmud is their commentaries. So they get you away from God's word with commentaries about it, right? And then that becomes the thing. And that's really what you see happening in Christianity right now. You have the Scofield Bible, which is just all these commentaries that are there. And that has taken people away from actually reading the text themselves, thinking about it themselves. And now we're at the second level where you got all these people debating about all these prophetic things that they think they understand about it. And they've lost the connection to the main thing, God's word and God's son. They make it about a political entity and what's going to happen to that political entity. It couldn't get any further away, actually, than to make it about politics. Well, Trump had
Before we go on, I also want to thank the people that support us. We really do appreciate it. We cannot thank you all enough. And I want to remind you that it is because of your support that the show continues. So if you find value in it, we would appreciate if you do support the show. And that can take on many forms, whether it's liking, subscribing, sharing the broadcast. It doesn't have to be monetary. We really do thank you all for everything that you do.
Yes.
And also want to let people know that they can go to homesteadproducts.shop and they have on sale right now their Red Bud Blossom Tea. It's 100% organic. It's on sale from $9 to $7.50. So please go to homesteadproducts.shop, check out the Red Bud Blossom Tea, see if it's something that you would enjoy. I've never had Red Bud Blossom Tea, but we lived in a neighborhood that was called Red Bud and had a lot of them, and they're very, very pretty. So maybe they're delicious, too.
Never thought of drinking them.
Yeah. But again, homesteadproducts.shop, go check out their tea. And we thank you all for the support that you give us.
Yeah, I really like, he has very innovative, natural products that are there. I really like that. Yeah, it is very interesting, the different things that he's come up with. I think one of the key things was the tumbleweed fire starters. I thought that was a great
one. Yeah, those are great products. I have some. They work every single time. I've never had it fail to light the charcoal. Yeah. So if you have a charcoal grill or just looking for an easy way to start a fire, the tumbleweeds, they are fantastic.
It's summer or winter. You're exactly. Trying to start a fire in your fireplace or trying to start the barbecue grill. It always works. Let's talk about Trump. I guess we should start calling him President Gump. And he had a President Gump moment yesterday. You had the Japanese press that was there, just like we had it's Wednesday. We had the Irish press that was there, and he was talking to the Irish prime minister. And they were asking him questions, and they asked him very good questions, better than the American press usually asks. And so he had the Japanese press there. And they asked him, you know, why didn't you tell anybody, any of your allies, about this?
Of course, Japan and U.S. are very good friends. But one question, why didn't you tell U.S. allies in Europe and Asia, like Japan, about the war before attacking Iran? So we are very confused about we Japanese citizens.
Well, one thing, you don't want to signal too much. You know, when we go in, we went in very hard. And we didn't tell anybody about it because we wanted surprise. Who knows better about surprise than Japan? Okay? Why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor? Okay?
Yeah, why did you have your day of infamy, right?
This could be No, you believe in surprise, I think, much more so than us. And we had to surprise him, and we did. And because of that surprise, we knocked out, the first 2 days, we probably knocked out 50% of what we, and much more than we anticipated doing. So if I go and tell everybody about it, there's no longer a surprise, right?
See, this is part of the problem. Every once in a while,
the ignorance,
once in a while, he says something that is objectively hilarious. That was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. But
and yet
he's
using it to defend something horrible that he did. It's like, you guys did something horrible too.
You surprised us with Pearl Harbor. And, you know, FDR, ignoring all of the things that led up to it and the context for it and all the rest of this stuff, it still was a day of infamy. He was right about that. He wanted to maneuver them into a war, and he did, passively, aggressively, but it was still a day of infamy because we all understood that you need to declare war. And, you know, you don't do sneak attacks, right? And yet that's exactly what Trump has done. What he's done is infamy. It's perfidy. It is initiating and starting a war. He is the aggressor in all this. As they're pointing out, though, in the Independent UK, Donald Trump is now trapped in a war that even he can't chicken out. Supposed to be a good enough businessman to know when to cut his losses and when to call it quits, he should go back to making America great again while he has a chance, says the writer in the Independent. And, of course, everybody realizes that this is expanding. And you can see it in terms of what they are demanding. You know, we need $200 billion for this and all the rest of this stuff. And so everybody realizes this is shaping up for a quagmire. So are you going to be a quagmire in terms of the economic issues with this? Because now these facilities have been blown up. That's not going to be just, you can't just turn the oil supply back on. And so everybody understands where this is headed. But a key issue with this, I think, was a Frenchman who took him to task. You know, we had some interesting questions that were put there by, and comments that were put there by the press from Ireland that traveled with their leader and from the Japanese press. But you had a French interview, and I'm trying to find it on here. I'm not sure where I put that. So you had a Frenchman who actually was talking about Trump. Here it is, right here. I'll read this transcript as he's speaking here so you can see the guy. He's got said, first of all, we got five reasons to say no to Trump.
En fait, cinq.
Alors,
la première, c'est que.
So what he's saying is, first is that he hasn't understood that if he wants a NATO operation, that NATO is going to take command. He said there'll be an American general, but it's a single operation. You can't have an American operation bombing everything inside or below or beside it and a European operation doing something else. No. It is a single operation. That means that you put the operation under the NATO flag. And I'm not sure that Trump understood that. He said the second reason is that to do this, NATO will need to agree. So in fact, it's up to the Americans to put it on the table, our desired end state and our strategic objectives, if you got any, right? And so then the interviewer says, but wait a minute, opening the Strait of Hormuz is already an objective. He says, yes. But he needs to do it for the entire operation because we're not going to enter something where they just tell us that and the rest isn't our problem. He says you can't run an operation on Hormuz and surprise every morning stealth bombers flying around. No, that's not how it works. So the interviewer says, well, you worked with the Americans for years. You were at the heart of NATO. You are the Frenchman who held the highest rank in NATO's operational chain. So if your old American general buddies came to say, help, it's crucial for the world to free this strait. Now, what would you tell them? And he says, well, I would say we'll come to an agreement. But you tell us in writing what we're committing to and what is your objective. Then we'll discuss. You tell us what you want. Then we discuss. Not tweets. Not things that change every 2 minutes. So first, listen to this. Trump himself will want to know what he wants. And if NATO wanted to do this now, it should have started 2 months ago. It was 2 months ago. He should have told us, even in secret. NATO can keep secrets. Guys, at the end of February, I'm starting something big. It would help if we prepared to see what I mean. He said it would have been an agreed to in secret. He said the third reason is to tell him to get lost. It's not really a question of means for the Strait of Hormuz. He wants to share the political risk. He himself says that he doesn't need more frigates. He doesn't need 1,000 more soldiers at the Strait for these moves. So in reality, he wants to share the political risk, not the military risk. And the interviewer says, well, there's still some capabilities, if I understand correctly, that France has, notably mine sweepers, etc. So there still are some means. He says, yes, but for now they haven't deployed mines. And the issue isn't really the mines, it's the drones. It's direct fire. He said, the fourth issue is a question of trust. This is a guy who abandoned the Afghans, so he'll drop us in a minute. It's, if it suits him, right when we're in the middle of an operation. He said, the fifth reason is that on the Titanic, the captain apparently tried to sell cheap tickets for the dinner dance after hitting the iceberg. Are we really there in your view, he says? Well, he says, is the operation really the Titanic, says the interviewer. And the guy says, yes, it's possible. So this isn't the time to buy a promotional ticket for the Titanic. And he says, and here's the last argument. And it's the same argument this person in the Independent made. You know, it's time to cut your losses and run. If you're a businessman, you should know that. He said, here's the last reason. And he said, it's an American reason. He said, it's something that I learned at the American War College. That is, don't reinforce failure. You find something else and you go elsewhere, but you don't reinforce failure. So there's plenty of reasons to say no, he said. And that last reason, that is something that something's really hammered down to me by people, and I know the what the instinct is. You know, we had at one point we had six stores, and you got one of them is doing blockbuster video, you know, not blockbuster video, doing blockbuster business, I should say. Unfortunate choice of terms, but that was our competitor. Anyway, it's doing great. And right across the street from a blockbuster, as a matter of fact. But anyway, it's doing great. Then you got some others that are not doing so good. And so your instinct is to try to, well, that store is doing great over here. Why can't we do the same thing with this one over here? Let's pull this one up. Instead, what you need to do is you need to focus on what's succeeding and not on what is failing. That is a classic business mistake. It's also a mistake in military means. He says, don't reinforce the failure. We got an area over here that's failing. Well, abandon that and go consolidate where things are working. Trump doesn't understand that because he's not a good businessman, quite frankly. He bankrupted six casinos, and he's working on bankrupting not just the United States, but the world now. He's going to drag everybody into a global depression. So a U.S. naval escort won't 100% guarantee tanker safety in a Hormuz choke point. As Zero Hedge pointed out, said oil is now trading for $150 a barrel in Asia, where demand destruction has already started. China and India are the most pressured. Western U.S. partners have rejected Trump's request to send warships to help reopen the strategic waterway, plagued by kamikaze drones. They say plagued by mines, but the mines have not been laid. It's right now, it's kamikaze drones. As I pointed out yesterday, one guy said, yeah, they could lay mines, but that would be the last thing that they would do. Right now, with them being able to do selective fire with drones and missiles, they can let certain ships pass through and block others, which is what their intention, stated intention is. They want to block U.S. and Israel ships, but they want to allow Chinese and other ships to go through. If they put mines in, they completely, that's like a nuclear option. And so they haven't done that yet, but the kamikaze drones are bad enough. Secretary General of the International Maritime Organization told the Financial Times in an interview on Tuesday that even if naval escorts materialize in this narrow waterway, they will not provide 100% guarantee of tanker safety. It reduces the risk, but the risk is still there. The merchant ships and seafarers can still be affected. You know, the problem is that you are only talking about being 3 or 4 miles away from the shoreline where they can fire these things. So you've got basically zero chance to respond to this. It makes it very difficult for the U.S. ships. And the U.S. ships and the way they have structured the aircraft carrier battle groups and things like that, they're designed for operating in deep water, not for operating in littoral. I don't know if it's littoral or littoral, how you pronounce it, but that's shallow coastline waters. That's a very different type of operation. Tanker activity on the waterway has slowed to a crawl. Only 400,000 barrels per day compared to, before the closure, an average of 14 million barrels a day. So in other words, it used to have 35 times the amount of traffic that it has right now. Well, you got the Rutherford Institute and I can't remember his name now. But anyway, always spot on. He's got an op-ed piece that Freethought Project picked up. John Whitehead, Power Without Principle, The Rise of the Bully President. And he opens up with some quotes, and going back to the Access Hollywood thing. Well, when you're a star, they'll let you do it. You can do anything. You can grab them by the blank, and you can do anything, said Donald Trump. And then Donald Trump, when he's talking about Cuba just a couple of weeks ago, he hasn't changed, right? I think I can do anything I want with it. Whether I free it, whether I take it, I think I can do anything I want with Cuba. In other words, you know, just like his girlfriends, he's not finished with one before he starts with the next one with his wars, right? It's been 20 years since Trump bragged that as a star he could do anything, even assault women and get away with it. Two decades later, what sounded like crude bravado has become a governing philosophy that might makes right, that power excuses everything. And that accountability is for other people, but not for this president. It's just like Netanyahu in that regard, right? These Genghis Khan wannabes. He has governed exactly as he promised, as a man who believes that he is unaccountable, entitled, and free to act without limits. So, yeah, will he have a quiet retirement? Will there be impeachment next year? What about lawsuits? What about both Trump and War Pete being referred to the Hague International Criminal Court? The same mindset that once bragged about being able to, quote, stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot anybody, I wouldn't even lose any voters, he said. And that's true. The people who are identifying as MAGA voters still are not upset with Trump for the most part. I put that out and I said, I guess it just shows that you can fool some of the people all of the time. He can be accused of sexually assaulting young girls. He won't lose any voters. He can, as commander-in-chief, sanction the bombing of a girls' school in Iran, killing young girls, their mothers, and teachers, and he won't lose any voters. He can torpedo a thriving economy, sending inflation and gas prices soaring, and he won't lose any voters. He can be a walking, talking, living contradiction of everything that Christians claim to stand for, and he won't lose any voters. He can send American servicemen and women to die in what the U.S. and has no business starting, and he won't lose any voters. This is the mind shape that is setting America right now. The tactics of swaggering arrogance, always prepared to browbeat and to mow over anyone and anything in his way, has become all too familiar. And that's exactly what we see in Mark Wayne Mullen. No wonder Trump wants him for ICE. ICE is very important to Trump because it's allowing him to set up a thuggish, bullying federal police that is militarized. Never forget that we are what the target is. It's not so much the immigrants that are here. And again, when you look at War Pete, War Crime Pete, he's also an abuser of women. That's what his mother said about him. She said, I have no respect for somebody like you that abuses women. That was in a letter that she wrote that came out when he was up for confirmation hearings. So we are partnering again with a Genghis Khan wannabe, a Christ-hating Netanyahu. They are the geopolitical equivalent of Epstein and Trump, all these guys. Well, when we look at what is happening with boots on the ground, that is the next thing that is down the path here. The U.S. is weighing military reinforcements as the Iran war enters a possible new phase. And that's what the BB avatar was saying at the press conference the other day, yesterday. That's what he said. You know, you can't do this without having boots on the ground. So come on, America, pony up. considering deployment of thousands of U.S. troops to reinforce its operations in the Middle East as the U.S. military prepares for the possible next steps in a campaign against Iran, said a U.S. official, and three people familiar with the matter. So the Trump administration has also discussed options to send ground forces to Iran's Karg Island, the hub for 90% of Iran's oil exports. Three people familiar with the matter and three U.S. officials said. One of the officials said that such an operation would be very risky because Iran has the ability to reach the island with both missiles and drones. But hey, we got a plan, don't we? Well, actually, no.
Yeah, right here. Yes, you have said that the U.S. military has essentially aerial superiority, naval superiority over Iran, yet we're not escorting ships through the Strait of Hormuz. Why? How did you not plan for this?
We plan for it. We recognize it. Because ultimately...
We plan not to be able to keep the Strait open.
Most sense for what we want to achieve and ensure that we're sending the right signals to the world when we do so. So when Chris Wright speaks or we speak, it's based on a full assessment of what we're up against, what we want to say to the world, how that we want them to see and understand the conflict. It's like this whole idea of the war widening. That's what the press wants to make it look like it's widening and chaos is ensuing. No, we're actually closing in on grabbing hold of and controlling what objectives we want to achieve and how we want to achieve them. It's called shaping operations and setting the conditions. But when you shape the environment, you don't always tell. I mean, foolish political leaders and foolish military leaders of the past will hang an exact deadline on it. Or here's exactly when we'll do.
Yeah, foolish people would tell you what the plan is because that would be foolish. Because if we knew what the plan was, we'd all say, no way. So just don't tell people what the plan is. And so now we are enlarging this. Now we're going to have boots on the ground. Was that the plan? No, because it's going to take them a couple of weeks to get the troops there. This is an afterthought.
I have a plan. It's so funny that you think I don't have a plan. It's so strange that you would think I didn't have a plan.
Yeah, it's amazing how this guy can weasel out of this stuff, but everybody sees that he's a weasel. Yeah, he's asked, why didn't you plan for this? Why did the Strait of Hormuz? Well, everything's going according to plan. So I guess then you plan for the Strait of Hormuz to be closed. You plan for all the oil refineries to be blown up. That's your plan. Are we, the American people, being slowly prepped for ground action? Asked Zero Hedge. Officials say the buildup would give Trump additional options, with the war having dragged far past the initial pledge of days or some kind of a brief in-and-out Venezuela-style operation. But, you know, we were told a week and a couple of days ago by Ben Shapiro, this is not a quagmire. These guys know exactly what they're doing, and we're winning. We're not losing. We're winning with all this stuff. I tell you, that is going to be, I'm going to go back to that Ben Shapiro op-ed piece and a couple months down the road, and we're going to camp out on that for a while.
Developed into a quagmire by that point.
Yeah, that's right. As the Avatar Bibi was saying.
It is often said that you can't win, you can't do revolutions from the air. That is true.
So we're going to have the American boots.
From the air. You can do a lot of things from the air, and we're doing. But there has to be a ground component as well. There are many possibilities for this ground component, and I take the liberty of not sharing with you all those possibilities.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be boots in the ground, folks. People are going to die from this stuff. For what? For what? You don't want to tell people what this is for, even, right? I'm not going to tell you. Yeah, that'd be foolish if I were to tell you. Yeah. There's also been talk of some kind of special forces raid to secure Iran's enriched uranium and key nuclear infrastructure, which some military analysts consider that to be essentially a suicide mission. One U.S. official admitted to Reuters that putting troops around Hormuz or on Karg Island would be very risky, given Iran's ability to hammer the island with missiles and drones. As a matter of fact, if you look at the topography of Iran, this is how one group summed it up. It's a shoreline, ragged, jagged, mountainous, rocky, and narrow at points, giving the Iranian side a defensive advantage. Also for hit-and-run style guerrilla tactics.
Do you know that it is a gigantic task to launch a ground invasion in Iran? Let's analyze. Iran's geography is a natural fortress. Encircled by towering mountain ranges, it naturally repels invaders. From the west, the Zagros Mountains run 1,600 kilometers along Iraq, with peaks over 4,000 meters and narrow passes that choke armor and expose convoys. This is the reason why during the 1980s Iran-Iraq War, Iraqi troops took Khorramshahr but stalled in Khuzestan foothills, trapped by terrain in an 8-year stalemate, costing over 1 million total casualties. To the north, the Alborz Mountains shield Tehran, abruptly climbing from the Caspian Sea's shores, funneling any assault into deadly choke points. Eastern borders with Afghanistan feature jagged uplands prone to flash floods. The interior? Vast, scorching deserts like Dasht-e-Kavir's salt flats and Dasht-e-Lut's 158-degree heat. Quicksand for vehicles is hell for troops. Southern coasts along
the... Why does anybody want to live here?
...straight into Zagros foothills, complicating amphibious landings. Spanning 1.65 million square kilometers, Iran's terrain would demand immense logistics. It also favors the decentralized mosaic defense doctrine of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, ensuring local units continue fighting even if the capital falls. If anyone knows history, ground invasion of Iran isn't just tough, it's a strategic nightmare.
Absolutely. Worse than Afghanistan is what a lot of people are pointing out. Absolutely true. I mean, look at that terrain and all the rest of it. Why does anybody want to live there? And when you look at the elevation, that's the other issue. Even to the extent that people are not used to that high elevation, like us, it presents a medical issue for them because it is up 3,000 or 4,000 feet above sea level. A defiant Trump told the press last night that the war would end when I feel like it. While Defense Secretary Pete told CBS the U.S. is, quote, willing to go as far as we need to. We don't care how many lives and how much money we need to spend on this. And for what purpose? Seriously, what is the purpose? You know, we're told, oh, we got to get rid of the bad guys. We got to get rid of the nuclear weapons. And yet, they've told us they got rid of the nuclear weapons twice now. You just had Avatar Bibi say that. We destroyed their nuclear facilities yet again. And as far as the bad guys go, I mean, how far down the list of bad guys do we have to go? You know, we got the Ayatollah and several levels below him and people on both sides. You know, why do we have to keep doing this? What is the justification for it? If the justification is nuclear weapons and bad guys, you can check that off and go home. And they should. But it truly is a nightmare scenario. One analyst from Turkey said a comprehensive ground intervention could prove even more strategically costly than Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq combined. Iran is one of the biggest countries in the world, coming to in at just over 630,000 square miles. In total landmass, it is larger than France, Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, and Portugal combined. Think about that. It's most of Europe. France, Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, and Portugal combined. It's bigger than that. It also has one of the largest populations in the world, with more than 93 million citizens. Can 50 million Frenchmen be wrong? It's probably, I don't know how many people they've got from third world now in France. It's considerable. But that was kind of the number that we used to always hear. That's half of the population of Iran. Four times bigger than Iraq. Three times bigger than Afghanistan. Meanwhile, it has nearly twice as big a population as both nations. The whole country has an incredibly high elevation, creating other issues as well. But don't let any of that get in the way of Trump's ego. Well, all we can do at this point in time is try to spread the news and the truth about how dangerous this folly is. Thank you for joining us. Have a good weekend.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary.
but each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.